Thanks, Meg. Awesome. I love you. And thanks for all you've done for me during this journey. And it's amazing. And thanks to everyone here. So, my name is Scott, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic and also a very grateful home group member of Newcomers International. You know, the foundation of my program started in this room. I was a little over 120 days sober, and it was Thanksgiving, big holiday here in the States. And it was my first sober holiday, and the first time I had all three of my kids together at the same time since entering recovery. And it was emotional. And when they left, you know, I was on the verge of a relapse and I couldn't get hold of my sponsor and I needed a meeting. So, as many of you have probably done, I looked online, found my way here, and the first voice I heard was Alia. And it was amazing. And it was then that I found a new family. And so, as you've heard, my sobriety date is 7/26/2023. And through God's will, the program, and of course, your fellowship, tomorrow I'll celebrate, 3 years of continuous sobriety, 3 years that have absolutely flown by. And a friend in my in-person home group likes to say, you know, you always need to start at the end because you can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. And about a month ago, you know, I sat beside a friend of mine, her name is Lori, in a hospital, and she was dying from this disease, and her body was ravaged. She was jaundiced, badly swollen, and struggling for every breath. And, you know, she was suffocating and drowning on her own fluids. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen someone die an alcoholic death, but it is not pretty. It's horrible. And she couldn't speak, but she didn't have to. You know, her eyes told me everything, and they filled with tears, you know, that spoke of the fear, the regret, the realization of where this disease had brought her. And Lori, she was truly awesome. She was a dear friend. We had been through a lot together, and the mother of two very young children. But the disease consumed her, and that night she was alone because she pushed everyone away and burned every bridge, you know, with those that were close to her. And on page 25, the big book tells us that we have a choice between two alternatives: either go onto the bitter end or accept spiritual help. And if we choose the first path, we die. The bitter end is death for me. It's simple. If I drink, I die. Keith tells us every week. And my friend Lori was faced with that same choice for years, but alcoholism blinded her to the solution. And that night, I watched Lori take her last breath. And I was the only one in the room with her. And that moment forever reminds me that this disease is not only patient, it's progressive, it's brutal, non-forgiving, and it will kill you. And I start here because that was my friend's end. And it doesn't have to be mine or yours. And when Amy first asked me to share, it was really funny. It was about a month and a half ago, and she said, "Can you come up with a topic in about a month?" And I stopped her right there and said, "Piece of cake." And she goes, "That needs to be your title." And then, with tomorrow being my celebration and all, and then all of a sudden I said, "You know, you're right. And sobriety is not a piece of cake, but I embrace AA as a way of life. And one day at a time, life becomes a whole lot lighter." And that's exactly what the big book means by a design for living. And Alia, especially when I first started coming in, used to say that, and she stresses a design for living. And it's so true. And after 3 years, I've reached a place where the discipline in my daily routine has become a rhythm. And that rhythm has truly delivered freedom. And that kind of freedom I never thought was possible. Freedom from the stories that my alcoholic brain used to always find a way to manufacture. And I'm not going to spend any time today talking about what brought me into these rooms. You know, we all have different stories, different bottoms, different consequences. What I really want to share is what has happened since I walked through the doors of AA. And that's the freedom I want to talk about today, the freedom that comes from practicing these principles every day until they become second nature. Through consistent practice, I've built routines that have become that design for living and no longer feel like obligations. They've changed the way I see everything, the way I respond to people, and the way I handle challenges. And that's the direct result of the psychic change that comes from practicing these principles daily. Not perfectly, but consistently. And the program is simple, not easy, but it is simple. And I try every day not to overthink it or overcomplicate it. And we come into the room, and the suggestions we all hear: go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, you know, pray and meditate, keep coming back. And as our dear friend Cage says, just glue your butt to the seat and don't leave. Right? And the funny thing is, we spend so much time looking for some secret, or at least I did. And I don't think there is one. AA has been giving us the answer for over 90 years. And today I enjoy what I consider emotional sobriety, but it didn't come from focusing on just one or two of these practices. One meeting didn't do it, one prayer didn't do it, one sponsor, one meditation, one act of service didn't do it either. It's become the combination of all of them repeated day after day that has transformed, excuse me, my program, and as a result, transformed my life. And seeing that I brought the cake theme into this, I'm going to reflect on my program as pieces of that cake, six pieces to be exact. And these six pieces make up my daily program. In the first piece is my daily commitment of practicing step 11 through prayer and meditation. I start every morning with prayer, asking God to keep me sober. And I end each day with meditation and quiet reflection, reviewing my day and letting go of what I need to leave behind. These practices have become the foundation of my day, and nothing gets in the way of not doing them. And together, prayer and meditation strengthen my relationship with God, giving me the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. The second piece is meetings. I attend, at least two meetings a day. That might sound like a lot, but meetings are where I get reminded over and over of what happens if I forget this program. And honestly, they're also where I have a chance to be useful, maybe, where somebody who's struggling might hear something I say and it helps them get through the day. Or maybe I hear something, most likely, that someone says to get me over whatever issue I'm going through. And I never leave a meeting having felt less than when I went in. And the third piece is talking to alcoholics throughout the day, all day, all over the world. I wake up every morning connecting with another alcoholic. And thanks to the global reach of Newcomers International, I have access to alcoholics 24 hours a day. And I go to bed the same way, phone calls, text, voice messages. It doesn't matter what time zone, because the disease never sleeps. And the circus inside of my brain is always in town, but talking to other alcoholics prevents me from needing to stand in line and buy a ticket. I'm reaching out constantly, sometimes to ask for help, sometimes to offer it, and sometimes just to say hello and to stay close to the folks who understand me. And I'm going to tell you a real quick story on this third piece. So my son Christopher, it was about 2.5 months ago, and he just celebrated his first year of sobriety a week last Friday on the 17th. And he actually asked me to talk about how this disease has changed my life. He asked me, with regardless of his sponsor, to give him his first chip, and his sponsor agreed, and I was so grateful for that. But about 2.5 months ago, he reached out to me, and it was early. He lives in Nashville. It's about an hour. It's an hour time zone before ours, so it was really early, very early for him. And he called, and I was a little concerned. I said, "What's up?" And he goes, "I'm Dad. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed." And I said, "Okay." And it was too early for him to call anybody that he knew there. And he said, "I just need to talk to another alcoholic." And I just stepped back, and he couldn't see me, but I had a smile on my face. And I didn't know at the time, do I talk to him like I would talk to one of you, another alcoholic in the room, or do I talk to him like a father to a son? And I talked to him like I would talk to you, another alcoholic in the room. And as it turns out, I probably would have told his brother the same thing. But when we got off the phone, I said, "Listen, I'm proud of you. You know, good job and congratulations." And he goes, "For what?" I said, "You just proved how to work this program. You felt overwhelmed and you picked up the phone and you called another alcoholic and you were aware to do that." And I said, "And that gave me just a sense of security and confidence in how his program is working." So I hate to diverge that way, but I thought that was a great story, and I really wanted to share that. And so the fourth piece, let's get back to that, is just helping others in and outside of the rooms. You know, there's a quote from Picasso where he said, "The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away." And a big part of helping others inside of the rooms for me is sponsoring other alcoholics. You know, this might be the piece that's given me the greatest reward. When I sponsor someone, when I work with them through the steps, I'm not just helping them, I'm relearning the program with every new sponsee. And it's always reaffirmed for me when the awakening occurs or something finally sinks in. You see it in their eyes. I mean, you all know that. And there's nothing that keeps me sober, quite like watching someone else feel like they found their way into a life that they didn't think was possible. And it reminds me every day how remarkable this program is. And the fifth is humility. Every day I try to live with one simple desire to seek and do God's will. That's how Bill W. defines humility in the 12 and 12. And I learned that through Miss Shelley. And Shelley, I'm so glad you're here today. Shelley took me back through step six and seven, and it changed my life. And humility isn't, excuse me, is thinking of myself less. Excuse me about that. Humility for me is a verb to seek and do God's will. It's an action. It's how I treat people. When I start chasing my own agenda, which is not good, the fear, the resentment, the pride take center stage, and the need to control begins to creep back in, and I start to isolate. But when I pause and ask God, what would you have me do? This is when the words love and tolerance mean everything. Life becomes lighter. I don't live these things perfectly, but I practice them constantly and consistently. And that daily pursuit of humility keeps me teachable, spiritually fit, and reminds me that recovery isn't about getting my way. It's about becoming the person God would have me be. People in the program have recently been asking me, knowing that I'm coming up on my third year, where I have seen the most growth in my program from year 2 to 3. And I know the answer immediately. It's a huge factor in fueling that freedom that I'm talking about. And I'm aware of it now more than ever. And that brings me to the sixth and final piece. And it starts with the pause button. Truth be told, fear and resentment still knock on my door every day. They're just not in charge anymore. And I preach this to those I work with. And you probably heard it in my Tuesday daily reflections, probably a million times. I'll never be able to control my first thought. But today, when I'm triggered, which is often, I know that I can control my second thought and definitely my first action. And when I hit that pause button, now more than ever, I'm able to sit back and reflect on what is my true role in that situation? Why am I feeling the way I do towards that person, place, or thing? And 99.99999% of the time, it all comes back to yours truly. Always comes back to me. And being aware of my longstanding alcoholic patterns of behavior, that's huge. And knowing that, my toolbox always finds a way to provide me with the mindset not to overreact and the ability to de-escalate the situation. And this is what Donna spoke so beautifully to us about yesterday in her step study. And it works. It's kind of like become my superpower. I don't know, but it has greatly also helped me in how I take the people I work with through the steps, especially 4, 5, 6, and 7. So those six pieces compose the lion's share of that cake, which is my program. None of them are remarkable, excuse me, by themselves, but together they have transformed my life. Individually, they're just pieces, but when put together, they become the recipe for my emotional sobriety, which delivers a freedom that I can't put into words. But there is a catch. Recently, I witnessed two scenarios on complete opposite sides of the spectrum, which occurred within 2 weeks of each other. During that period, and this was about maybe 2.5, 3 months ago, I was in two separate Zoom meetings, one being in here, where two different alcoholics, both with 23, crazy number, 23 years of continuous sobriety, relapsed. And they were back in the rooms, day counting in their first week off of relapse. On the flip side, 1 week later, I was attending an in-person meeting where two alcoholics were celebrating combined 94 years of continuous sobriety, one with 43 years and one with 51. And when all four were asked, what happened or how did you do it? Their answer was simple and remarkably similar. The two with 94 years said that they pray every day, they still sponsor, and they still attend multiple meetings during the week. The two that relapsed both said that they took their foot off the pedal, stopped going to meetings, stopped talking to, and stopped working with other alcoholics. Complacency came from both of their mouths. The big book tells us, page 85, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual conditions. Every day, when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. That to me also sounds like humility. That paragraph reminds me that long-term sobriety doesn't and isn't determined by how many years you've accumulated or by how faithfully we continue to practice these principles that brought us here. Four beautiful alcoholics, two with 23 years each, and two with a combined 94 years, eventually found themselves on the opposite ends of the spectrum. The difference wasn't a secret ingredient. There isn't one. The six pieces of my program are simple, but they only work for me when I continue to live them every day. It's a rinse and repeat process for me, that turned into my design for living, customized perfectly for Scott R. And as I look back over my 3 years of short years of sobriety in AA, I realize that every meaningful change in my life can be traced back to four fundamental things. The relationship with my higher power that instills in me a deep humility, which is two, which then directly leads me to serving others, which is three. And they all dovetail into one of life's greatest gifts, and that's love, and that's four. Love fuels my program, and I truly believe is the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every morning I wake up to messages from two incredible alcoholics, our good Scottish friend, Stephen, and my mentor, most of you know, Babe K. What's remarkable is that although the words are different, the message is almost always the same. At the heart of it is love, where they begin, it's where they end, and it's where the foundation of how they live this program. And for them, and also for me, I have come to believe that love is ground zero. Thomas Merton said, "Love is our true destiny, and we must find it together." For me, I believe love is the bridge between us and everything. I found God in the rooms of AA. I found humility in the rooms of AA. I found freedom in the rooms of AA. I found love in the rooms of AA, and I found you in the rooms of AA. Why would I ever want to give that up? Every one of us has a metaphorical pot of gold waiting at the end of our own rainbow. I hope yours includes the same gifts this program has given me: love, freedom, peace, and a life you never imagined was possible. But whatever your pot of gold looks like, you'll only find it by working your own program, one day at a time. Only you can write that story. But if you glue your butt to the seat, like Cage tells us, and stay here in this room, you'll never write it alone. Every chapter is shaped by the alcoholics who walk beside you, sharing their experience, strength, and hope until one day you're doing the same for someone else. And if there's one thing I hope you take from my share today, and from what the big book has taught us, don't look for a secret ingredient because there isn't one. Just keep showing up, do the simple things, do them every day. Let them become your design for living. Write your own recipe, bake your cake, and don't forget to enjoy every bite along the way. Freedom and serenity definitely await you. And with that, I am Scott, a very grateful alcoholic, and thank you for letting me share.